guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And I got three Patriots stories I want to read you. Maz, we'll start with Karen Garigian's fine story today in the Boston Herald.
By all means.
She was at the Combine, and she asked around about Tom Brady. Headline, age-old answer. She says, subhead, foes don't expect Brady to slow down. Karen writes that Brady has done such a good job defying his age, and in many ways being a better quarterback at 40 than he was a decade ago, that a lot of his NFL rivals have pretty much given up on waiting for his decline. Quote, he'll probably be as good at 41 as he was at 40. Tom's ageless, said Jets coach Todd Bowles. I think he'll play as well as he wants to, as long as he wants to. Chiefs coach Andy Reid agreed. Quote, I don't think you'll see a drop-off, Reid said. He takes care of himself. He's one of these unique characters in this profession that make it so great. Shoot, I hope he plays till he's 50. Whatever he wants to do, he deserves the right to do it. You want to jump in?
Sure, yeah, I would like to. Are these people stupid? Is that what it is? Now look, Karen's writing the story. I don't blame Karen. Because what are these guys supposed to say? They're going to say, well, we only think he's got about a year left, and then we're going to be stacked, and we're going to go for the Super Bowl in 2022? Is that what they're going to come out and say? Like, here's what irritates me about this Brady angle. And when I say angle, I'm talking more about fans and people who buy into it. The older he gets, the closer we get to the end. Fact. It's very simple, really. So this idea that he's going to continue to defy it forever, to me, is absolutely asinine. I don't get it. Now, look, I will admit, I've been wrong. I never thought Brady would make it this far. But now that we are this far, are we really going to sit here and say he can play till he's 50? He can play as long as he wants, as far as I'm concerned? That's what we're going to say? Every year, he gets a little bit closer to the end. And it's not about being right for people like me who sit here and say, no, you know, here's what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe he will play five more years. But the point is, if you're the Patriots, can you plan it that way? There's no way you can plan it that way.
Not five, but three. They have to.
See, I don't think you can plan three.
Oh, they have to.
I think you have to have a guy ready to go in a couple of years. Well, a replacement ready to go in a couple of years.
Well, they screwed that up, so now they have to be.
Okay, so well,
okay, but, can with Brady.
But that's a, but now it's a different that becomes a different question, Murray, right? Because it's how much more can you get out of Brady? Because it's going to take us X number of years to get the next guy ready. To me, they should have kept Garoppolo, but again, let's not go down that road. This idea that you know, that there's no end in sight, I still believe it could come quickly. It could come at any given time, and they were ready for it, and now they're not.
Okay. Do you expect Tom Brady to be a slow decline, or the next year he's off the cliff?
I expect, no, I don't think it's going to be off the cliff. I think you'll see a relatively slow deterioration. And I say slow, you know, put whatever speed you want on that. I don't think he's going to get to, you know, play well in week 7 and then drop off in week 8.
Because the guys who are 40-ish, generally it's a cliff.
Right.
And I'll give you three examples here coming up. But just let me finish with Karen. Karen also quotes former NFL executive Mark Domenech, used to be with the Buccaneers. Talking about Brady and his success at 40. I'm in awe of it, said Domenech. I'm in awe of it. The way he played last year, he's definitely got 2 or 3 more years. It's incredible. Whether you love him or you don't, you're witnessing something amazing right now. You'll appreciate it more as time goes away. But his game right now says nothing to the fact, oh well, when they hit the wall, it hits fast. I don't think that's the case for Tom.
Wrong.
Well, I just asked you.
Yeah, no, it's generally wrong, but I think what'll happen with Brady, you asked me what I think will happen with Brady.
Right.
And I think what'll happen with Brady is you'll see some slippage in a season, and then he'll come back for the next year and you'll see a big drop. That's how I think you're going to see it.
So he says he doesn't expect the wall with Brady. He does not expect the wall. Domenech indicated he's seen no noticeable change in Brady's mechanics from when he first came in the league. The delivery is still pretty much the same. He hasn't had to make any concessions to age. Quote, he's had good mechanics throughout his career, and he's a clean liver, said Domenech. He's a clean eater. That was the sound of me rolling my eyes. A clean everything. If you take care of your body, you should be able to play 2 or 3 more years. Okay. What Tom Brady, people say what Tom Brady's done is unprecedented. Not quite. He's getting to the place where it's just about unprecedented. But not quite. And let me give a few examples. Brett Favre is the most famous one. And this is why I roll my eyes at the clean living thing and the clean eating. Brett Favre was not on the TB12 method. And Brett Favre, by the end of his career, was probably living a little better. But for the most part, he was a hard-drinking, pill-popping, you know.
Budweiser and wings.
Yeah, exactly. Bud Heavy and wings was a BF4 method for most of his career. And at his age 40 season in Minnesota, he was epic. Set career highs in quarterback rating, 107, completion percentage, 68, and touchdown to interception ratio, 33-7. It's a guy who had won two MVPs, and who a guy in his 20s in the 90s was a force of nature. At the age of 40, at the end, he goes to Minnesota. They go 12-4. They go to the NFC title game. Again, 68% completion percentage, career high by far. 33-7 touchdown to interception ratio and a 107 quarterback rating. 107. His previous high was 99. He broke 100 only once in his career, and it was at the age of 40, and he blew by it. Next year, played only 13 games. Quarterback rating went down to 69. Threw only 11 touchdown passes against 19 interceptions, and it was over. Boom. The cliff.
Hey, he got knocked out here. I think that was basically it.
The wall, the cliff.
Did he have an injury that year?
Yeah, elbow. Yeah. Peyton Manning. Now, Peyton Manning only made it to 39, okay? But look at his career arc. You want to talk about beyond suspicious? Like, talk about... excuse me. What are you doing? Peyton Manning, in the three previous seasons, before he missed the entire season with neck surgery, and went to Europe for... excuse me, I have something caught my...
They rebuilt him like RoboCop.
The platelet replacement spiel?
Platelet-rich plasma injection.
So yeah, he went for that. The 4 years, I'll give you four. The 4 years going into that year that he missed with the neck and then got that surgery out in Europe. Quarterback ratings, 98, 95, 99, 91. Touchdown passes, the 4 years prior. 31, 27, 33, 33. Sense of... Pretty, you know, like pretty consistent.
Static.
Okay, static. Want to know what his three quarterback ratings were the 3 years when he came back from the...
Didn't he have over 50 one of those years?
Okay, again, the quarterback ratings going into the surgery, 98, 95, 99, 91. Quarterback ratings coming out of it, 105.8, 115, 101.5. Touchdown passes, 37, 55, yeah, 55, 39. Yeah.
It's stupid.
What were you doing? Like, give me, like, in hindsight, you look back at that and you go, please. Like, would you please? But then the next year, 9 touchdown passes, 67 quarterback rating, done. Threw the football like it was a can of full paint, as Jim Murray would say. And wall, cliff, goodbye. Bye-bye. And so Warren Moon had something similar. I'll save you the numbers, but he had something similar. At the age of 41, he had a real nice year for Seattle. Went 7-7, you know, was 500, but he threw for over 3,000 yards, had 25 touchdown passes. The next year, at the age of 42, played only 10 games, had a quarterback rating well below that, threw only 11 touchdowns. It's not as precipitous as these other two, but it's similar.
So he made it to 42.
Okay, but the point is, these age 40 guys, like Elway was a gradual decline, Montana was more of a gradual decline, but those guys were done in their 30s. The guys in their 40s, it's pretty much a wall. It's a cliff. It's the next year, you're not even the same guy.
See, I was just to say, though, that on two of those guys, there were injuries.
Well, but that's, I think that's part of it.
Right. So Brady really hasn't had a major injury like that, whether it's his elbow or his neck. I mean, he had the knee early in his career. So if he has another injury, everything changes. So I just think that he's also a different kind of quarterback, certainly, than Favre was.
Manning, though, you saw that slippage, like halfway through that 14 season where he had close to 40 touchdowns, and he was still really good. And then in that playoff game against the Colts, it was like, oh, my God, what's happened? And then in 15, he was a disaster.
I think you're right. The second half of 14, it started to take hold.
So that's what I think you'll see with Brady.
Me too.
Is that you'll see a slippage, and then the next year you'll see a drop. Like, that's how I think it will happen with Brady. Unless it's an injury in which everything changes. I just think he's been, you know, relatively injury-free his entire career, at least as the major ones, and more importantly, the chronic ones. So, look, I'm not telling you that I think Tom Brady in 2018 is going to come in and suck, because I don't think it's going to happen like that. But do I think there's a chance that by the end of the year we're going to look at Brady and go, slid a little. Yes, I do. I think there's a chance that could come anytime.
Haven't we been saying that for 6 years?
Yes, yes. But again, so listen, you want to, but you want to tell me I've been wrong for, you know, the last 6 years? Fine. So now he gets to 41, and I'm supposed to say the chances are going down? Like, you know, so what? Like, if you're talking about us, we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. Like, when you get to this stage, the odds increase. So if that makes me an a-hole, so be it. I'll be the a-hole. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you at age 41 that I think his chances of playing long are better than they were when he was 37. I don't. I just think, to me, that's logic.
Okay, Patriots thoughts. You want to weigh in on the Brady thing? By all means, couple open lines for you. So I'd grab them now. 617-779-0985.
You're listening to Felger and Bass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I was joking my wife earlier this week. She said, oh, great, babe, now you can retire, because I know, you know, you always wanted to win another Super Bowl. And I said, you know what? It's just, not to her, I said, yeah, no chance. But I said, this is actually when it's really fun. You know, I think
you mean when you're doing it when nobody expects you to be able to do it.
No, I think doing it when you've had the mental experience to be able to play for as long as I've had, and my body still feels like I'm in my 20s, because I've got the answers to the test now. There, you can't surprise me on defense. You know, it's, I've just seen it all. It's not that I'm, you know, some, you know, I've just been able to process 261 games. I've played them all. Now it's actually like, it's an incredibly hard sport, but because the processes are right and they're in place, you know, for anybody with experience in their job, it just, it's not as hard as it used to be. There was a time when quarterbacking was really hard for me because you didn't know what to do. And now finally you get to a point where you really know what to do. I don't want to stop now.
Did he look aged at all last year?
No. No, there were a couple of times where, again, and I think there were variables in play, whether he was banged up or he didn't have Gronk in Miami, or there, you know, and even the Tampa game, he didn't have Gronk, where you would say he didn't look right, the ball didn't come out right for a couple of weeks there, maybe a few more than that. But there was never anything that you looked at and said he's on a decline.
And I felt like we did, and I don't think we were wrong. There was a little stretch there 4 or 5 years ago where Brady did, his mobility was not what it is now, and he purposely worked on it because of it, where I think he saw the ghost rushers a little bit more. He wasn't as good as eluding pressure within the pocket as he is now. I think he got a little bit locked in with some of his receivers at the time. I think it was a spinoff from sort of the Moss and Welker stuff, where the offense evolved to something. I think between that and the mobility piece, I think he started to show just a little bit of his age. But he hasn't in the last couple. And so, I don't know. I don't know, Maz. I'm sort of done predicting it, even at 41.
Yeah, I'm not predicting it either. But again, to me, there's a different question. If you were planning it, what would you plan for?
3 years.
No way. No way. No, you're nuts.
3 years, absolutely.
Oh, you're nuts.
Oh, well, they have to.
With the plan, they now have to.
They have to. When they trade a Garoppolo, that's the idea.
Okay, so meaning you'll get 3 good years out of them?
Yes, correct. Yep. Uh-huh.
Okay, so then you don't have to draft a quarterback this year.
Not necessarily. It wouldn't stun me if they don't.
That would be stupid if they didn't.
Well, what if there's not a good guy there? What if there's not the guy that you just don't do it to do it? That's when you really get in trouble.
Okay, but it's supposed to be a deep quarterback draft. To me, they should be drafting a quarterback.
Let's see. It would not stun me at all if they don't. It'd be so like them if they don't. So like Bill if they don't. Jack and Dedham, what do you got, Jack, on the Pats?
Okay, all right. So let's say Brady does have 3 years left. And we all agree at this time.
Your phone is just not happening. I'm going to put you on hold because I'm in a good mood. And we'll see if we get to a different area. Walk to the other side of the room, Jack. Here's Chris in Medford. Go ahead, Chris.
How you doing? You know, watching this Patriots team sometimes, these linebackers just piss me off so much. Grigsby and Landon Roberts. It feels like I'd rather have Maz out there sometimes. Do you think that the Patriots should give this guy with one hand a shot in the draft? All right, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a... I want them to because I want to root for him. Like, I want to root for this player. And I want to... Like, I feel good about that player being on my team. Like, he's just such a great story, and I want to root for him. Do I want to spend a first or second round pick on a guy with one hand?
No, he's slated to go somewhere from third or fourth.
You know, just then from a practical standpoint, you know, I don't know. I think that's a tough call.
So, look, this guy's become like somehow a Patriot story in the last couple of days. Here's what I'm going to tell you.
Why has he become a Patriot story?
Because they need linebackers. So here's what I would tell you. I don't care who they draft if he can play. That's all I care about. Go get me some linebackers they can play. Because the stuff they've had on the field for the last year or so is garbage.
Is there value? Is this player going to go much lower than he would have because he has one hand?
Probably.
I mean, it feels that way.
So in
that
based on the combine, the number he put up in terms of the 40 that he ran is insane.
Yeah,
so, yeah, there's probably going to be value there.
So, you know, in that respect, isn't he a perfect Patriot?
Well, sure. Again, but you're talking about a bargain, right? Like, if you could get this guy
is
late.
Is he going to be a bargain because of his hand?
Put it this way. If he's available late and they think he can play, yes, take him. You need linebackers.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
So, again, my answer to the question is, if you think he can play and he plays linebacker, I'm in.
Here's Matt in Newton on Peyton Manning and his fall. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, didn't they start testing for HGH in 2014, midway through the season? And then Manning just fell off the map?
It sounds like a Mike and Attleboro thing. He remembers all the you know, the timeline. Maybe. They might have. I mean, because all of a sudden Manning shoots up, and then all of a sudden Manning shoots down. It's really, it's when you look at his stats, it's just sort of, it jumps off the page. It's like a steroid era in baseball sort of thing. It's like all of a sudden you're this guy, this guy, this guy, then bang, straight up, and bang, straight down. And I'm sorry, Favre is the same thing. Favre is the same thing. Like, where the hell did you get that season from, dude?
When was that whole investigation with Manning and the clinic in Indianapolis? When was that? Was that 2015?
Don't remember. Yeah, maybe 15.
I mean, there's plenty of smoke around that guy.
I mean, again, Manning's quarterback ratings, 4 years going into neck surgery, 98, 95, 99.9, 90, 91.9. The 3 years coming out of it, 105, 115, 101.
What were Brady's ratings the 3 years going into Garoppolo and the 3 years coming out?
Okay. Let's do that. That's good. That's a good one. 2014 was Garoppolo, right?
Yeah.
His quarterback ratings, this can't be right.
Give me 2011, 2012, 2013.
Your thing cut off, Jimmy. His quarterback ratings weren't in the 70s. This is, I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, I'll get it for you.
For some reason, the columns didn't. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I have it. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
The 4 years going into Garoppolo were 111, 105, 98, 87. 87 was the last year before Garoppolo. Garoppolo's first year was 2014, right?
Yep.
So it was from 87 to 97 to 102 to 112 to 102.
Uh-huh. Just interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, he got a big, fat injection of Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's exactly what he got. Yeah, Jimmy G spot.
Here's Brandon in the car. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I just wanted to touch on something that you're not, you know, bringing up is the supporting cast of all these declining quarterbacks. You know, you got Montana that you brought up, who's got Jerry Rice and whoever else. You brought up Elway, who had Terrell Davis, who was completely lights out all season long until, you know, Elway stole the show at the end. But I just want to hear what you guys have to talk about that.
Because I'm not factoring that in. I'm just using the eyeball. You know, Elway, when Elway was in his prime, he was like a dual threat like you'll never see between the way he could run and his size and an absolute gun rifle.
I mean, he had it all. He did. He had the strength, the speed, the size, the arm, all of it, and the brain.
And I want to say, in my just remembering it, he slowly became not that at the end. But it wasn't like, you know, Manning, 1 year he's up here and 1 year he's down, or Favre out of nowhere he has that year in Minnesota and then the next year he's done. Like, Elway felt gradual. Montana was, it felt like sort of a slow grind of injury and ineffectiveness on the way down to the, Montana felt like he just sort of grounded out to a nub. I'm not talking about this round. I don't care about this surrounding cast. I think you can just tell using your eyeballs. Tom Brady does look better now than he did 5 years ago. That I feel confident saying for sure. He moves better than he did 5 years ago, if you can believe it. Brian in Whitman. Hi, Brian. What do you got?
How you doing?
Good, Brian.
I just have a question. What do you guys think about drafting Luke Falk out of Washington State? Take a look at his stats. Let me know what you guys think.
Please.
I don't want any of these quarterbacks. None.
So, look, again, I don't care about the stats. The stats mean nothing.
Yeah, what are the stats in the Pac-10 going to tell me? I have no clue what they mean.
But he's one of the guys that allegedly is going to be in an area that they may be able to get, right? So, look, you want to tell me Luke Falk? You want to tell me the kid at Richmond?
The kid at Richmond is the one they're drafting. The kid at Richmond, his father played at Navy. His, like, grandfather played at Navy. I think
uncle was a punter at Navy.
I think, so the kid at Richmond, his father was the quarterback at Navy when Steve Belichick was there. His uncle played at Navy when Steve Belichick was there, and he plays lacrosse. There's no point in talking about anybody else. There's no point in talking about anybody else.
This Kyle Laletta.
This is
who they're going to draft.
Yeah, Laletta. So it's either him or Faka, one of those guys. Look, they're not going to be able to take anybody at the top of the first round. So forget those guys. So you're going to have to take someone in that next tier. Like, that's the kind of guy they're going to get.
Okay, we're mostly Patriots today. Free agent happenings. There is a franchise deadline coming up in less than 30 minutes. Do we get the counter on NBC Sports Boston? Come on. Let's get the counter. You have 4 o'clock to franchise somebody. Not that they would do it, but I'm going to leave out 0.5%. 0.5% chance they franchise Malcolm Butler just to F with him, to restrict his market and not let him be a free agent, and then trade him, you know, for a 7th-round pick just to send him somewhere, or, you know, you can rescind the tag at some point later on in the process too, like no harm, no foul, just to mess with him. We'll see if they do that in the next 29 minutes or so.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, we're mostly football today, but a few little things we want to mix in. Here's one of them. It's always my favorite time of year, Murray, because it's NCAA tournament time. And not that I give 2 poops. I give less than 2 poops.
I give 1.5.
I don't even shart when I talk. I could give literally passing gas about the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Unless, like a team I grew up like Wisconsin or Marquette gets deep, then fine, I'll watch a half here or there. But you're going to have to do that on your own time.
Yeah, that Frank the Tank year, you were really into it.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I watched it, kind of. That's just a backdrop of saying there's only one reason I do like this time of year, because the UConn women get going as well. And I enjoy when the UConn women get going, because that brings up Maz and Gino.
So I log on this morning, and what do you think is on my screen? 100 straight wins for Connecticut. 100 straight wins. And I went, wait a minute. They won 100 games in a row? Like, didn't we do this last year? Then I looked it up. Do you realize that they moved into a new conference a bunch of years ago? The AAC. Not the ACC. Not that one. The AAC. The American Athletic Conference. And since they've been in the AAC, Connecticut has won every game. Every single game. They are 100-0 in the AAC. And I'm supposed to think this is good, not bad. And I'm sorry, I can't come at it from that point of view. So last night, they are now in the middle of the AAC tournament. Not the ACC tournament, the AAC tournament. And they played in the semifinals last night against Cincinnati, maybe, I think. And they won the game 75-21.
Oh, my God, really?
In the semifinals of the conference tournament, Murray. So I'm presuming this means that Cincinnati is one of the 4 best teams in the AAC. And they beat them 75-21, which brings me to the question of how good really is the AAC if you can go 100-0 and win in the semifinals 75-21. So, like, I'm wondering, who exactly is in the AAC? Is it Maimonides? King Philip? Who's in there? Fontbonne Academy? Are they there? St. Clement? Like, I'm wondering, which high school girls' programs are in the AAC that Connecticut is taking pride in kicking the snot out of every late winter, every March?
Let's look it up.
100-0, and they won in the conference semis by 54 points. Connecticut had a woman on the team score 21. They beat this team 75-21. Like, what's the point? Seriously, someone needs to explain to me what the point is. What's the point of playing to see someone beat the snot out of someone 75-21 for their 100th straight win? Is there any drama in that at all? Is there any uncertainty? I watch sports because I think the outcome's in doubt. Except in women's basketball, where UConn beats another team in the conference semis of the AAC 75-21. 75-21.
A game in which they apparently held that Cincinnati team scoreless in the second quarter.
Yes. They had a run in that game of 38-0.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for bringing that up. I forgot about that. I researched that this morning. They had a 38-0 run. They could have not scored at any other point in the game and won by 17, Murray. It was 75-21. Oh, my God, it's ridiculous. It really is. And I'm going to have all the women's basketball people now lining up to tell me how Gino Auriemma is the equivalent of John Wooden.
Well, it's a yearly tradition at this point.
Oh, God, please stop. Stop. 75-21 in the AAC. Oh, God, what a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke. Joke. It is a joke. End of story. Joke.
This is my favorite part of the NCAA every year. No question about it. And then they get right up, Maz. You're right. Travis at UConn. Go ahead, Travis. Travis!
Hey, how you doing?
Go.
So, you notice you're talking about UConn women. They lost the national championship last year.
Good.
So, I mean, they didn't win every game. And it was also the highest-rated women's basketball game ever. And so, I mean, they'd win every game no matter what conference you put them in. Do you want them to just lose? I mean, I don't understand here.
No, I just don't want to celebrate them as some sort of great thing when there's no competition out there, clearly.
I mean, there is competition. It's just no one's even close. That's all I got, but thanks for taking my call.
Well, you just sort of contradicted yourself. Travis, out there at UConn?
There's competition.
It's a fine UConn education right there, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, and I'm glad they lost the national championship. It at least gives me hope that every now and then they can lose a game. That's better for the sport if they lose every now and then. This idea, the 100 wins in the conference, they've never lost a conference game. Never. 100-0. What do you think? What are the odds in this game of Connecticut winning? Oh, I don't know. I'd say about 100%. It's such a joke. Like, why even watch? It's unbelievable. No, it's not 50-50. What would you put the odds on them winning in this game? About 100%. Oh, I love that.
And we have yet to hear from Gino yet, but that's coming on.
No, it's great. No, that's the reason I watch. To watch something that I know is coming and be entertained by it. That is exactly, oh, it's fabulous. What a great idea. 100-0. That is so pathetic. Like, what is the point? Good God. I'm done.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
Well, we had some Patriots reading to do. I read you Karen Grigian's column in the Herald. How people and foes across the league do not expect Brady to slow down or fall off the cliff. And we discussed how realistic that is, as we've been discussing for years. But it's always worth revisiting. So that's on the table. And then there's this column on NBCSportsBoston.com by Tom Kern, who's, I think, done some great work this offseason. Terrific thought-provoking stuff from Kern with some inside knowledge that you know that he has to the point where he can't even reveal it, but you know he knows things, and it comes through in his writing. And so I think it's valuable. And today's column from Curran is Belichick listening to anyone anymore? And it's this whole premise about, is he being challenged? And Tom starts the thing by basically going back to 2009 and talking about how then that was the one, you know, sort of off year with Belichick. He sort of lost the locker room. They weren't all pulling in one direction. That was a real rough year for them by their standards. They went 10-6 and got blown out in the wild card game by the Ravens. And he goes through, you know, Tom goes through like sort of the timeline of that year, and Belichick kind of admitting after the season ended if he was getting really the pushback that he needed on that team. Because, again, as Tom points out, that 2009 year, Charlie Weiss and Roy McConnell were long gone. Scott Pioli had just left for Kansas City, and Josh McDaniels had just left for Denver. Also, four of the strongest locker room voices in the entire Patriots run to that point, Mike Vrabel, Richard Seymour, Teddy Bruschi, and Rodney Harrison, were either traded or had retired. So by the time he got to 09, no Rack, no Charlie, no Pioli, no McDaniels, no Vrabel, Seymour, Bruschi, Harrison. At one point in late November of that year, I said to Tom Brady in the locker room, this place seems different, ... He answered, it's changed a lot. We were very young. Curran writes that the void left by players and coaches who'd built the Patriots with a certain selfless style was filled by players who really didn't give a damn about the so-called Patriot way, and minor dust-ups ensued. So he goes through here now, Adalys Thomas and Sean Springs and Randy Moss and all these different sort of episodes in 2009. He says the money quote for the season was unveiled 2 years later when A Football Life was released on NFL Network. That's when that famous scene on the sidelines in New Orleans when Belichick says to Brady, "I just can't get these guys to play the way I want them to." Curran writes that after 2009, a house cleaning ensued as Belichick adjusted his grip on the team. In the 8 seasons since, the Patriots have gone 102-26, have been to 4 Super Bowls and 7 AFC championships. He says basically what happened there is that Belichick gained back control of the team, strengthened his grip on the kind of players he wanted there and the kind of players he didn't, and that has sort of led to where they are. As Curran writes, there's a quote from Ohio State Urban Meyer from last April in a conversation he had with Belichick. Urban Meyer speaking, saying, "I started talking to Bill about it, and he made this point to me. He said, at this point in my career, I want to coach guys I like. I want to coach guys I want to be around, and that's it. I'm not going to coach anybody else." So, Curran writes, Belichick, and then Curran goes into this whole thing where, in that next era, Chandler Jones, gone. Jamie Collins, gone. Right? He says, Belichick long ago earned the right to run his football team as he sees fit. He's the best coach of this era and maybe any era. But it is worth wondering if the mindset that Belichick came to embrace entering his 20th season as Patriots head coach, the one that he articulated to Meyer, "I want to coach the guys I want to be around with and that's it," has advanced to a point where he'll brook no opposition. Who says, to borrow Belichick's line from January 2010, "What are you doing? Are you serious? Are you seriously considering that? Is it Casario? Is it McDaniels, Robert, or Jonathan Kraft? Or is Belichick, at 66 and with the record completely unmatched, not really that interested in hearing that anymore?" I hope that wasn't too long and convoluted, but do you understand what Curran's getting at there?
Of course, yes, that it's reached a stage where Belichick is so intolerant of people that, as players, that he doesn't like, that he will make decisions fueled by that, at least on some level, and that there isn't anyone to say, "Bill, what are you doing?" Why, and look, the easy one to point to is Malcolm Butler. Did it reach a point with Malcolm Butler where Bill said, "You know what? I liked this guy at the beginning, and then as it developed and as the relationship went on, I didn't like him anymore, so screw that. I'm not going to work with someone who I don't like. Jamie Collins, out." And which is all well and good if you have suitable replacements. But if you don't, what happens? You have a talent drain. You don't have enough players to win games. Big ones, anyway. Maybe you can beat the bad teams and the mediocre ones, but you get up against ones in the Super Bowl that have lots of talent, particularly in offense, and all of a sudden you don't have the players to stop them. And there wasn't anybody on your staff at the same time to say, "Bill, do you really want to sit Butler for the whole second half? Do you really want to do that?" So I think it's a legit question. I think, you know, I know we've talked about this a little off the air, but there's that old, you know, and it's a total cliche, but power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And so as you get 20 years, like as you said that number, I went, holy crap, 20 years, it's been 20? Like this is, or this is, whatever it is. Like you look at it and go, that's a long time in pro sports. 20 years, 20. You can understand if someone wins a lot of games and gets to that length of time, that all of a sudden they look at it and say, "You know what? I got 5 rings here. I've been to 8 Super Bowls. You're an a-hole. Get out."
So his power's unchecked. I read that. I feel like, okay, his power's unchecked, and everyone underneath him the last handful of years are afraid to speak up. So, one, looking forward, how am I supposed to feel good about Josh McDaniels potentially becoming the head coach of this team if he's afraid to question anything Bill has done? Is that a leader? Doesn't reek of one to me. Also, good luck, Detroit Lions, with Matt Patricia if he's also afraid to speak up.
So that's the one that I thought of. Because Matt Patricia, when I view him, I view someone who is completely not his own person. Like, just... I felt that he was the way he carried himself was so petrified of Bill and so deferential to Bill. I mean, to the point where it was like, "Matt, do you have a thought in your head? Do you have any sort of strength to just say something that doesn't have Bill up the back of your shirt?" And he took it to the nth degree. And so on Butler. So that's who I look at with Butler. Like, if that were Romeo Crennel, who were the defensive coordinator, Bill's peer and of the same age and someone who, you know, came up with Bill and all of that, and Bill was doing that to Malcolm Butler, don't you think Rack would have the, Romeo Crennel was his nickname, Rack, that he would have the, whatever, the gravitas or the backing to go to Bill and say, Bill, this is a mistake. We should be playing this kid.
Yes. And yes, but I also think you used a key word. He was a peer.
And I'll tell you, Matt Patricia, I do not feel is that kind of guy.
But again, Patricia owed his career to Belichick, right? So there's a whole different dynamic there. And this is part of the reason why I think Belichick likes those guys that come up through the system, because he knows they worship him. And he knows that they will sort of go along with it, and he can coach them and mold them and develop them. And whatever they do is purely what he tells them to do. They haven't had enough outside experience to be able to challenge what he says. Now, look, there's also a benefit to it. Continuity, consistency of the operation, consistency of the system. But once you bring in someone with credentials, that person's going to look at it and say, well, we didn't do it this way in the other place I was in, and Bill doesn't want any of that. So I think it's, you know, and I just think it's the kind of problem that will get worse over time.
So this thing about he wants to coach people he wants to be around. Didn't Burt Breer tell us this story too, Jimmy? Did you grab that sound of Burt Breer? You know,
Maz pulled it.
Do we have it?
Belichick spoke at Ohio State's coaching clinic last spring, and I can remember Urban Meyer getting up there and introducing Belichick, and he was talking about lessons that Belichick had given him. And, you know, one of the things that Urban said was that Bill said to him, you know, I've just kind of come to the point in my life at my age where I don't want to coach players I don't like anymore. I want guys who are on board with what we're doing here. And it was interesting to hear that at the time, because you could kind of take that and say, well, is that what Jamie Collins being traded was about? Is that what Chandler Jones being traded was about? And Belichick's never been afraid to make bold decisions, but it seems more often over the last 3 or 4 years, they've made more decisions based on guys going off the reservation just even a little bit, and they've been a little less tolerant of that sort of thing. And so, you know, that's why, again, ultra-talented players like Collins and Jones are gone. And you'd have to think that it certainly played a role in why Malcolm Butler wasn't on the field last night.
So just, yeah, stop there. Right? Is it because, so this is sort of back to the thing where it's beyond football decision, it's beyond disciplinary decision, it's personal.
Yes, it's personal, because he finds the player to be, you know,
you're not my guy.
You're right. Insubordinate.
Difficult or uncoachable or disrespectful. Disrespectful is the wrong word. But again, doesn't, you know, do what I want him to do.
Is it realistic to Bill to expect to have talented guys, committed guys that he all likes?
No, it's not realistic.
How is that possible?
It's not. Not when you have a roster that size. Maybe on an NBA team, but even then, you're not going to get it.
60-something players.
Yeah, no shot.
You've got to like them all.
Unrealistic. Unrealistic. And so, look, again, and so, you know, we can point to it and say, has he always been this way? He jettisoned Collins and he won the Super Bowl. But
nobody's done a better job in league history in molding bums than this guy. I mean, Kyle Van Noy has a ring, thanks to Bill Belichick. But you can only go so far for so long with a lack of talent. It's a league where talent trumps trouble. This was the other thing. Taken from this, it's like, oh, okay, now it makes sense as to why they would pass on a guy like Marcus Peters, who the Chiefs, you know, we called, hey, would you offer anything for us? One of the top five cornerbacks in the league, who we're going to let go to the Rams for a fourth and a second round pick? Now we're good, because he's a bit of a malcontent, not one of Bill's type of guys.
I mean, to me, what's at the core of this, too, is you start to assess system versus talent. Is it the system or is it the talent? And the answer is it's both.
So here's just sort of the crux. The players he wants to coach, and on the staff, is there anyone there to say, Bill, maybe that's not the best idea?
So I think McDaniels has that. That'd be my guess. He's been around long enough.
Should have it.
I mean, he's been with him 15 years.
Should have it.
Like, now, did he have it when he went to Denver? I don't know. I mean, Bill's a tough nut to crack, right? Like, he's a hard guy to sort of ultimately win his trust.
You know, and this, the Collins-Jones thing, like, that has me thinking, and I'm going to, you know, give you an exercise here after Murray's update. There used to be a thing that we would say that, you know, Bill never let a guy go that did anything anywhere else, that you'd ever want back. Like, he always knows when to cut guys and move on from guys, and they bring nothing to the table, and you never hear from them again. I'm going to give you a defense made up of guys that Bill has let go in the last couple of years, and you tell me how this defense would make you feel if you had this defense on the field.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.